Perspectives and Insights, a digital series for Graybrook investors and prospective investors. The world around us is ever-changing, with new information, changing policies, and evolving dynamics that affect markets, economies, and have implications on investments and investment decisions. As active asset managers and the partner to our more than 8,000 investors, sharing our perspectives and insights in the residential real estate development industry, housing market, and private equity investment space is important. My name is Sarah Mansour. I'm the Executive Director of Strategy and Corporate Development, and this series endeavors to address key questions and pertinent topics on the minds of Graybrook investors. I'll be joined today by Sasha Chuchu, CEO of Graybrook Securities. Sasha, thanks for joining us today. Since our last Perspectives and Insights discussion back in June, we saw the Bank of Canada continue its tightening cycle, increasing rates to address inflation, with the most recent interest rate increase being a 75 basis point increase announced just a couple of weeks ago, which brought our overnight rate up to 3.25% in Canada. We were also discussing at the time the run-up in construction costs driven by both increases in commodity prices and upward pressure on labor costs, particularly in the province of Ontario, where we had spring-summer union negotiations that took place across a number of industry trades. And beyond costs, we also continue to contend with supply chain bottlenecks that were affecting construction projects of all types, including new housing developments. So what I want to talk about today is from our vantage point, knowing that interest rates are expected to continue to increase somewhere between another 50 to 75 basis points by the end of the year, I want to talk about our views on the implication of a rising rate environment on the broader real estate market, and then focus in on our real estate development portfolio, as well as our view on acquisitions over the near to midterm. So why don't we start there?
Sure. I guess I want to start with some good news. Back in the summer, we were contending with some real cost increases, and driven primarily by just a feverish pace in construction, supply bottlenecks, and a lot of commodity price volatility, like building materials volatility. That's starting to level off, and we're starting to see it come down, which is a big positive for the development industry. So that's something that I feel, as the economy goes from overheating to underheating, I'll put it that way, we expect that to continue to come down, which I think will have a positive impact on development projects. Interest rate, we're starting, we're seeing something different. So how is that playing itself out in the real estate market? I mean, on the resale side, it's rather obvious in the sense that when you have such an aggressive tightening program by the Bank of Canada to control inflation, that has really led to, I think, one of the fastest periods of increase following one of the fastest periods of decrease in history, there's going to be an impact. And what we're seeing is a real slowdown in the resale market. One of the barriers is the obvious, which is affordability is quite constrained when people's purchasing capacity decreases as a result of a higher cost of mortgages. The second, I think, is the psychological impact of just people not wanting to transact in a murky environment, right? Where they don't know where the economy is going. They don't know where interest rates are necessarily going. So the two of them compounded really causes an abrupt slowdown. And, I think that, none of this is really unpredictable when you think about how things have played out. But we believe that this over the long term is going to have, the reverse impact overall on where the market goes, in the sense that we have a tremendous need for housing. That's not a speculative thing. It's not, somebody putting money on red and then on black. Like, it's people need houses because population is growing. It's continuing to grow. We have aggressive immigration targets, and we're actually following through on those aggressive immigration targets. So, and supply continues to be constrained. And I'll talk a little bit about the constraint on the development side, but even on the resale side, the biggest thing that you're seeing in this market isn't so much just price decrease, its velocity has slowed down. So there's just not a lot of listings out there, and there's just not a lot of people transacting. I think that once the forced sellers, so to speak, have been purged from the market, because there's people that just got caught at the wrong time, right? They bought at the absolute peak, their mortgage rates went up almost instantaneously, and they were caught in a bad spot. Once we've kind of purged through those sales that have led to this kind of drop in pricing, it's relatively static at this point. You're not seeing a lot of transaction volume. So there's people that are just holding on. That's going to constrain supply. On the development side, you're dealing with both elevated costs for the moment, albeit I think they'll be moderating, like I said, and you're looking at relatively low sales volume and static pricing. So as far as developers go, they're not really releasing a lot of inventory into the market, and they're moderating the pace of their construction. So all this is doing is really further reducing the amount of future supply that we have in the market. So what does that mean over time? It means that we're going to be in a period of low volume, static pricing, but supply will continue to dwindle. And if conditions change, like I believe they will, the Bank of Canada is tightening very aggressively. They're tightening more aggressively than anybody else in the OECD to this point in time. But at the same time, our inflation levels are coming down faster. It's still sticky, but we're starting to see it come down month over month, both the core number and the number that includes a little more volatile things like fuel and food. But those numbers are starting to come down, which means that the Bank of Canada's tightening, you know, reactions have been actually working to slow down inflation. So if that continues, which I expect it will, then we're probably going to see another 50 basis points, maybe 75 for the balance of this year. And then by the latter half of 2023 into 2024, the interest rates are going to start coming down again. And what that's going to do is it's going to simply reduce the barrier that exists today in terms of people being able to access the housing market. And you're going to see a pent-up demand all of a sudden have to kind of pile into the market at a time where supply is even lower than it is today, because the conditions have been such that supply has been low, right? As I just pointed out on the development side. So really what we're looking at is a pause, if you ask me. And you know, for people in the development business like ourselves, it's not a one-year game, it's not a two-year game oftentimes. So you have to kind of think about your inventory and what you're doing over the course of years. And I see a lot of stability there. And if you don't want to take my word for it, you simply have to look at what's happened on the rental side of the equation, right? Because the minute that barrier has gone up, that, you know, interest rates causing mortgages to be inaccessible or less accessible, which reduces purchasing power, people have fallen out of ownership because they can't access it, but they piled into rental. We've seen double-digit increases in rental rates in places like Toronto over the past, you know, since January. Right. So over the course of almost a year or less than a year, three quarters, we've seen double digit increases in rents, which all that tells me is that there's fundamental demand for the housing. It's just, can I access it as an owner? No. Well, guess what? I still need a roof over my head. So I got to rent it.
Right.
And that sometimes is like a seesaw. And over time, as conditions change such that ownership becomes something that's possible again, then people start to switch back to that side. All in all, it's still a static need for housing that just keeps multiplying. And if all of a sudden the industry and the resale market is not fueling enough supply, then that demand is simply going to cause prices to gap up again. And this is particularly, it's going to be particularly visible on the development side, because the cost realities of development, even though, again, I see them moderating. And when I say costs are moderating, it's mainly hard costs, right? The things like building materials, the things like, you know, availability of trades and being able to negotiate, you know, appropriate labor rates, that is moderating. The soft costs, you know, development charges, any sort of municipal levies and things like that, those are remaining relatively static. In fact, in some cases, they're increasing. So what that means over time is that, you know, you're going to see still a rather elevated cost structure that means that developers are going to have to achieve certain pricing to be able to provide supply to the market. So prices will gap up to those levels. And if they don't, because the market tolerance isn't there, right? Let's say interest rates stay persistently high, or you know, people simply can't access at a price point, then all of a sudden, all of that cost structure that is today highly elevated, the capacity in the industry, right? When you're not using these building materials, you're not using all the sub trades and trades and general contractors, all those costs start to trend downward and your margins restored. And then you can start bringing supply back onto the market. So all this means that we're going to undergo a period of time, in my view, in the real estate market here in the GTA in particular, where the costs have moderated recently and are likely to continue to trend downward. But I think more importantly than anything, this is going to further constrain supply, which all that means is that some amount of time down the road, whether that's a year and a half from now or 2 years from now or 3 years from now, there's going to be another bottleneck that we're going to have to solve for. And that's going to lead to a much more sustainable growth path.
Right. So the challenge, you know, at least in the GTA, continues. The supply-demand imbalance, saga sort of continues. So let's just talk a little bit more about the existing portfolio we have. We're obviously in over 70 active projects, many of which are in Toronto and the GTA. Any other things that you want to talk about? You talked and touched on, of course, being patient, the ability to moderate when we launch sales or release new homes into the market. Any other points on what we're doing or actively looking at to stay ahead of the potential risks and decisions we need to make to manage through?
Yeah, I mean, I think that we have a lot of active projects that are in various stages. The first thing that I want to kind of point out is that notwithstanding a identifiable set of macroeconomic conditions and seeing the impact that's having on the market. So the good news is it's not ambiguous. You see what's happening. Is there a solution to every project in terms of how you manage risk? The answer is no, because how all of these things macroeconomically play out at the project level is highly individual, depending on the stage you're at, depending on sort of what the next milestone is, right? If you're launching sales, you're obviously looking at the health of the market and you're looking at how much velocity you need to achieve your target thresholds. So obviously you're going to make decisions on your sales program relative to what the market looks like and relative to your posture in the deal. So to give you an example, when you buy things with a very manageable amount of leverage and the market isn't supportive, you'd rather not launch. But you always have to do that calculation opposite. How much does it cost me to wait? And if you've done it well, you should have a lot of flexibility that allows you to wait for better market conditions. If you've done it poorly, like there's a lot of developers out there that will go out and get the maximum amount of leverage that they can on an acquisition, and all of a sudden, it's not as easy a decision for them because they're looking at, you know, a very expensive period of time to wait.
Right.
You know, whereas if you're in construction, you can make strategic decisions and you can use your scale. So for us, we always talk about how important it is to have large partners that have both large balance sheets, you know, the financial wherewithal that we're looking for, but that also have deeply entrenched relationships and a lot of scale in the industry.
Right.
This is where you can bring some of that scale to bear when you're looking at costs, when you're looking at how you're tendering your contracts, and hopefully you can regain margin at this point in time with very simple decisions. Like, for example, you could go out to market now and tender lumber, or based on everything you're seeing happen, you can buy your lumber in 3 months, and we all expect it'll be slightly lower 3 months from now than it is today. That's an example of if structured well and you have enough scale in the industry, you can do things like that, as opposed to if you're a smaller developer, you're over leveraged, you don't have great relationships because you've done this for a very short period of time, then you're gonna, you know, you don't, your decisions are limited because you don't have the luxury of being able to wait and do things like that. So this is where you're going to see a separation in my mind. When market conditions get difficult like this, is when you start to see a separation between sort of the larger scale developers and those that have a lot of balance sheet capacity, entrenched banking relationships, entrenched relationships with the trades and the general contractors, versus smaller developers that simply don't have the same bandwidth. So for us and how we navigate through these projects, once we've kind of identified the next milestone, you know, we have to be aware well in advance of what the risks may be, right? So I'm not suggesting there's risk everywhere because we don't know how it'll play out, but you have to prepare for that scenario. So what we do is we go through every single project one by one. We group them by milestone. We group them by what I mean by milestone is it sales? Is there a refinancing? Are we tendering a construction loan? What's the next step in the process? And then we look at the general macroeconomic conditions and we can pinpoint like, okay, well, if we're refinancing something, obviously there's going to be a situation where either our loan to value has changed or the cost of our interest is higher. How do we mitigate that risk? So we want to get ahead of these things, but it's a highly individual process. There's not a one size fits all type of solution. And between us and our partners, where it becomes very critical, as I said, who your partners are, this is an exercise that we're undertaking every day. And we expect that we'll be able to manage a lot of the risk.
Right. Absolutely. That is what we're doing every day. And the discussions that our asset management team has ongoing on a regular with all of our partners. Let's close it out by talking about acquisitions, because we're certainly still looking at a lot of different investment opportunities in the market. So what is it that we're considering? How are we looking at these opportunities that are upcoming?
So I'll answer your question this way, and at the risk of sounding like a broken record, so people who listen to this on a monthly basis might, or on a quarterly basis or whatever frequency, it sounds like a similar answer, but that's because, you know, the thesis hasn't changed. We talk about the macro and scarcity, right? We just talked about the fact that supply is going to dwindle even further and immigration continues to increase and population growth continues to increase. So that equation is very good for housing in the GTA. What type of housing? It sort of depends on where you're buying. What we focus on is, you know, in the core, we focus on, you know, high-rise projects, high density, high transit mobility. And then on the low-rise side, we focus on more affordable formats of housing, right? So, you know, the higher density types of housing, whether that's more affordable types of single-family communities or more dense types of housing, such as townhomes, semis, stacked townhomes, because that's where we believe the market is going. It's an affordability story. So obviously, the lower the price point, the better. That doesn't change at all. The micro, as it relates to what you're buying, well, everything that I just talked about when we were talking about the impact to our existing portfolio, and I cited, you know, thank God we have a partner with a big balance sheet. Thank God we bought with low leverage. Thank God we have all these levers that we can pull and using our scale and things like that. All of those things are the focus, right? So the amount of money that we're willing to pay, job one. How much leverage we're willing to use, job number two. Who our partner is and what are we buying and who is it with is job number three. Because all of these things always matter, and we're living through it right now and we're about to live through it for the next period of time, whatever that may be. So when we're looking at new things, you know, we haven't changed how we view this area and how we view our investment strategy, because people need housing and we are there to produce it profitably. At the project level, it always depends on acquisition. It all comes down to your acquisition. And today, the way that we're viewing it, just to give you a real example, is, you know, the construction cost environment is higher than it's ever been, and interest rates are higher than they've been in recent memory. Are we modeling forward big decreases in interest rates and big decreases in construction costs to make our numbers look attractive? No, we're looking at the world as it is today, and we have to pay an amount for the land that justifies the way the world looks today. right? And we can't rely on accelerating revenues, and we can't rely on costs falling down dramatically. So that all comes to land purchase and what are you willing to pay, and how are you willing to structure that deal? So if we can come to terms, it's harder to do these days, but we're still successful in doing so. That's how we need to view it. And we see everything. So if our outlook is right in terms of cost moderating, interest rates over time moderating, all of that should be a windfall to the project. So in this weird way, you're looking at the world as it looks today at a point where it's more likely to get better than worse based on what's happening macroeconomically. So when we underwrite, we have to make sure that those metrics take into account the most conservative forecasts. And then if we're right about where we're headed, that all should mean even further margin recovery, and the project should do better. So you know, that's kind of how we look at the world in acquisitions, and you know, we'll continue to do it, and we're trying to be opportunistic about it.
All right, thanks, Sasha. I think that's good insight and perspective for our investors on where we are and our continued strategy and approach as it relates to acquisitions. I want to thank everyone for listening to this discussion. And this is just one of many ways you can hear our perspectives and stay connected with us here at Greybrook. I also encourage everyone to sign up for our monthly newsletter, blog roundup, which you can do by visiting our website. And certainly don't hesitate to contact your Greybrook investment team with any questions you may have at any time. Thanks again, and bye for now.